put on some clothes. I'm getting a bit distracted myself. She playfully smacked Aria on her bare butt. Aria grabbed Tessa's hand and pulled her into a kiss. Lust and hunger played around in Steven's belly until hunger won out. Guys, stop that. I have to concentrate. Tessa cupped one of Aria's little breasts. Clearly we're not guys, but we'll behave. Aria jogged forward and said to Tessa, I'll meet you in the 14th floor suite. I'll gather my clothes. She hit the landing and transformed into her scarlet dragon form and flew off. Tessa came and kissed Steven's cheek. See you soon, Steven. Study hard. She then disappeared down the hallway to whatever kind of secret passageway she'd found. Steven returned to the book and found the pages that had been blank now were filled with writing. The ink from the chest had done its job. There were instructions on how to focus his mind to channel the animus into his various abilities. It wasn't just the words, it was the feel of the book in his hands, the smell of the dust in the pages, and the texture of the leather cover. The pain in his chest, that horrible heartburn, lessened, and he felt himself relax. And that was the key, to relax the mind and to surrender to the thriving energy swirling inside him. He couldn't fight the hot pain in his chest, but he could lean into it and accept it as a part of him. As he did, it was almost as if his cells melted into the inferno of power. Yes, he could see how he could change his shape now. He'd subconsciously been able to access partial transformation, Homo Draconis and dark armor through urgent need and instinct. But now he could unlock new abilities by choice. Spells were still beyond him, as were the exhalants, but his body? That he had control over. Now, when he imagined the skill tree, it was in complete focus, and he could decide on where to channel the animus he'd collected. In some ways, it was very much like playing a video game, just as he'd imagined all along. He gained animus from battle and sex, but he also gained some sort of intangible experience which allowed him to level up. As he gained levels, the amount of animus he could hold grew and grew, as did the raw force of his abilities. True mastery over the energy, though, involved the application and focus of the power. He decided to take his new abilities for a test drive, channeling his animus into the Dragon Strength ability. If he managed to unlock Dragon Strength, it would permanently increase his strength in both human and dragon form. He put the book down, inhaled, closed his eyes, and focused his will. He was sitting on the couch. The outside doors to the landing platform were open, and a cool breeze blew in. He was glad he was alone in the airy, or Aria and Tessa might have distracted him. Yes, both of them were very distracting. Aria with her long, lean body and small breasts, and Tessa with her curves and large chest. He blinked. That wasn't helping. Something else was wrong, though. He checked the book. A sketch showed a man, Stefan Dracaris, sitting cross-legged, spine straight, chin lifted, his hands folded in his lap. No, not folded. The fingers of his left hand rested on his right palm. The thumbs weren't touching, but they were only millimeters apart. The diagram was annotated, and it mentioned that his mouth should be slightly open, the jaws relaxed, and he should breathe in through his nose and out through his mouth. Steven sat down on the floor, assuming the position, and immediately the pain in his chest eased. It was like someone had reduced the heat on a gas barbecue. The flame flickered still, but it was far less intense. He envisioned his black dragon skill tree, fixing on the glowing orb labeled Dragon Strength. The effects were immediate. A wave of weariness swept through him like he'd been up for days and working hard. At the same time, his muscles thickened, his pants split, as did his shirt. It had been awkward, sitting upright with his legs crossed, but with the added strength, it was easy. Dizziness spun through Steven's head, and his stomach boiled with nausea. He slumped to the side, breathing hard, trying to get control of the vertigo. He reached out, and for a moment, he didn't recognize the flexing muscle. Holy shit, that was his bicep. Excitement flooded through him, wiping away the queasy, lightheaded sensations. He stood, and his pants fell off him in tatters. No wonder Dragon Souls had to acquire hordes. They had to keep replenishing their wardrobes with every change. His shirt fell from his back. Standing in his straining underwear, he looked down at the hard ridges of his body, his six-pack, the swell of his quadriceps. He put a foot out behind him and cranked his head to admire his calves. He was well below 10% body fat, more like 2%. He picked up the couch easily, and with a grunt, he hefted it over his head. Was this really his body? Sure seemed like it. An angry grumble exploded from his stomach. "Yep, I'm your body and I need food," that grumble seemed to say. He set the couch down and leafed through the book. The sections on the spells and exhalants were still blank. That made sense. He'd found the gift of a book and the magic of ink, but he still needed the power of the pen. With perfect timing, Tessa and Aria bustled in through the secret passageway, chatting amiably. Stephen grinned. His transformation had diminished his animus, but he knew exactly how to replenish it. First, he'd take care of his hunger, and then he'd deal with his lust and build his animus back up. Suddenly, having an escort of women made perfect sense. He turned. On the breeze came the strong scent of leather mixed with citrus, like someone had poured lemon juice on their old leather jacket. It was unmistakable. Stephen didn't think anything of it, but it put a bad feeling in his stomach. He thought it was his stomach, howling with hunger. It wasn't. Chapter 20. Tessa showed Stephen the secret passageway while he gnawed on a rib. They'd gotten barbecue, heavy on any vegetable they could find. Greens, corn, okra, and a variety of carbs like sweet potatoes, doughy potato rolls, cornbread, and french fries. There was easily $100 in barbecue of all kinds. Aria carried an enormous box, and now Stephen knew how. She had the strength skill from the tree. Tessa had one of the jeweled daggers that were sprinkled liberally around the suite. On the wall was a bright metal plate in the shape of a starburst with a slit in the middle. Inserting the dagger into the slot and turning it opened the wall. Small circular steps led down to another sliding panel at the bottom. Another gold plate was on the wall to open that door. Back in the main living room, Aria used another dagger to close the sliding doors to the landing platform. The golden starbursts on the wall looked like the Dracaris markers on his pendant map. Cool that he could see the similarities. More and more, he was feeling like a true dragon soul. Another dagger plate opened the wall to the right to reveal a dining area. It was like Hogwarts, with how easily the walls moved. It seemed like they could magically reconfigure the suite to whatever shape they wanted. Stephen, Tessa, and Aria sat down at a rough-hewn wooden table that could seat 12 easily. They clustered at one end, surrounded by a ton of food. "Something is different about him," Tessa said, eating cornbread slathered with butter and honey. "Is it his hair?" Aria studied him, got up from her plate of ribs and vegetables, and felt his arm. She then caressed his face. "He's using his animus to progress along the skill tree?" Stephen nodded. "Yeah, strength. The book is showing me how to harness the animus. Once I get more, I want to see if I can achieve my true form." Aria sat back down. "I think that is an excellent idea." Stephen had lost count of the number of ribs he'd eaten. Several pigs' worth, at least. He followed Tessa's lead by combining cornbread and honey to make a delicious dessert. "So, Aria, where are you at in the skill tree?"
"I'm still learning," she admitted with a shrug. "For a dragon soul, I'm young, only a few years older than you. We are similar there, though I've been able to achieve true form since I was a child. As for spells and exhalants, I'm still practicing."
"How long do dragon souls live?" Tessa asked.
"No one knows," Aria answered somberly. "Most die in battle. If we stopped fighting one another, we might be immortal. There are stories of ancient dragons who were around during the time of Hammurabi that have withdrawn from the constant war. If such dragon souls exist, they will want to remain hidden."
Stephen let that sink in. It was tragic, unnerving, but Aria had warned him days ago. If he accepted his life as a dragon soul, it would mean endless warfare and struggle. And yet, sitting there, feeling his strength, eating with two beautiful women, war seemed a small price to pay.
"Okay, next question," Stephen said. "With the ink tableaus, I saw what looked like werewolves. Were those dragon souls?"
"Morphlings," Aria said. Some humans have some dragon soul in them, half-human, half-dragon, and if they find a teacher, they can access some aspects of the dragon soul powers. For example, humans who can shapeshift we call morphlings. Those that gain access to the combat skills are known as warlings. We use the word magician to describe humans who can cast spells.
Tessa listened closely, not eating and not saying a word. Stephen frowned. So Rehagen Mulk has morphlings, warlings, and magicians on his side, as well as other dragon souls?
Yes, he has many vassals in his command, Arya whispered.
Fear filled her eyes as she looked off into the distance.
And Mulk will not stop until you are dead. Then the women in your escort will be forced to marry him.
That is so not happening, Tessa said abruptly, throwing down a half-eaten piece of cornbread. We aren't just going to survive Mulk's attacks. We are going to bring him down for what he did to all those people. And I have to say, if Dragon Soul Primes can force women to marry them, that shit needs to stop, like yesterday.
Revolution, Stephen said softly, thinking of what his real father had said to him in his vision.
Right fucking on, Tessa stood and went to him. She kissed him hard, right on the mouth. Her mouth tasted like honey, and she smelled like a day of travel, and he loved every bit of it.
I think it's time to make some animus, she said.
He was strong enough to pick up Tessa, walk over, and lift Arya. He wasn't just human strong, he was dragon strong now. He carried the women to the master bedroom suite and the canopied bed there. He flung off the thick, dusty, embroidered bedspread, and it sank to the ground. The sheets looked brand new and clean, and he laid the women down on the soft mattress. Their eyes twinkled up at him. Both were smiling. And then Arya grew serious.
I want you, Stephen. I want to join your escort and live my life with you. You are good, strong, and brave, and if I am to die, I want to die a free soul, and I know you will give me that freedom.
No one is dying, Stephen said with a lopsided, cocksure grin, and you both will always be free to do what you want.
I won't be once we make love,
Arya murmured, tears coursed down her face.
I'm afraid, but I want this, she faltered. I want you.
Stephen wasn't sure what Arya was talking about. After they had sex, things wouldn't change, but he figured he could talk with her afterwards. He stripped off his shirt.
Damn, Hulk out much? Tessa giggled. Look at him, Arya, he's beautiful.
She traced her nails over his abs.
Gorgeous.
Arya's face glowed.
It's the power of him, the Animus. He's chosen dragon strength off the skill tree, and yes, he is gorgeous.
Stephen felt himself blush a little. He'd never had anyone look at him twice, and now he had two women drinking him in with their eyes. It was intoxicating. He felt a little drunk as he helped Tessa out of her jeans. She, in turn, slipped Arya's dress over her head. They were all naked now, both of the women lying on their backs with their legs spread. Stephen went back and forth, kissing them, teasing them, tasting them, until first Tessa, then Arya shuddered in ultimate bliss. Stephen went to Tessa. He climbed onto the bed and between her legs, but Tessa stopped him.
It should be Arya this time. It's her first time with you, after all, Tessa said.
She kissed him softly and then turned to kiss Arya even more gently. Stephen moved over to Arya, admiring her long, slender brown body, her small breasts, and the little tuft of hair below her taut belly. He positioned himself to enter her, but before he did, he gazed into her bright green eyes.
"Are you sure you want this?" he asked.
"Yes, more than anything," the woman breathed.
And then Stephen was inside her. The heat around him, the energy of her body, and the glow of the Animus passing between them almost pushed him over the edge. He scrambled to regain control, and then he was kissing her, moving slowly and steadily, enjoying the soft cries of her pleasure. Tessa caressed them both, kissed them both, until Stephen lost control and let himself be consumed by the love and lust on that bed. Afterwards, kissing Tessa brought new life to Stephen's libido, and they made love while Arya watched. Again, Tessa's eyes radiated a bright brilliance as they shared animus until both were sent spiraling into heaven.
"I want another turn," Arya said with a warm smile. "Can you manage it?"
To his surprise, Stephen could. "I guess the dragon strength skill comes with other benefits." Hours passed and the sun set. Eventually, the three found themselves sitting on the landing platform, wrapped in blankets, looking up at the stars above, the mountains in front of them, and the streaming glow of I-25 traffic below. The chill air felt good after their hours of sweat and heat. Again, Stephen smelled the leather and citrus smell, but it soon faded into a damp scent of snow in the air. Spring in Colorado could be stupidly hot or wintry cold. You never knew.
"I bet it's going to snow tomorrow," Tessa remarked absently. "I love how the air smells, and I love snow, so win-win."
Stephen stood up and let the blanket drop. He was naked, but he was so comfortable with Tessa and Arya he didn't care. "I want to try true form," he said. "After our, marathon, I have a ton of animus in me." Arya and Tessa moved back, giving him room, which was smart since he wasn't sure how big he was going to get. He envisioned the skill tree, focusing intently on true form, and then felt the familiar itch of scales taking over his skin. His fingers became claws and a tail sprouted from his spine. He could easily achieve his Homo Draconis form, but now it was time to amp up the power and go full dragon. He concentrated. The burning in his chest exploded in new white-hot fury that felt like the birth of a star. He growled in pain but didn't let go or lose focus. He'd grown bigger. He towered over the women now, and the cold felt nice on his scales compared to the agony within. His back felt raw, wounded, but he ignored the hurt as he tried to push wings out of his shoulder blades. He grew another foot, focused, and the animus welled up inside him. Light emanated from his skin and even from his talons. Doubt filled him. What if someone saw the light show on the landing platform at the top of the tall hotel? What if he hurt himself trying to achieve true form too soon? One wing emerged from his back, but it wasn't formed well. The other remained tucked in the flesh of his back, refusing to come out. He finally dropped to his hands and knees, reverting to his human form. He gasped. "Not yet. I couldn't get there. Not yet." Arya and Tessa came and knelt by him.
"It's okay, Stephen. It happens to all guys at some point," Tessa joked.
Arya took up the joke.
"Yes, performance issues aren't anything new. You'll get it up eventually."
Stephen rolled over onto his back, still sucking wind. "Funny, guys. At least I could perform in the bedroom. I came close to true form, but I got worried about being seen. I lost focus."
"Wise," Arya nodded. "We have to keep ourselves secret. That should always be your main concern."
Back in the bedroom, Stephen found another starburst slot. With the twist of another jeweled dagger, the rock wall parted to reveal a balcony. He decided to keep the wall open, letting the cold air swirl around. He remembered how hot he'd gotten the night before. He kept the fire going in the fireplace for Tessa, and all three climbed into the bed, under the sheets. Curled up in their arms, listening to the fire crack and pop, feeling the cool air and smelling the snow in the night, Stephen found sleep easily. He'd never been so comfortable. Money would no longer be a problem. His mom could quit her job. He'd set her up in a nice neighborhood, maybe in Littleton, with a park close by. And when Joe Whip came sniffing around, which he would, Stephen would let him know that he wouldn't get a single gold coin from the Dracarys hoard. But the money didn't seem so important. No, keeping Tessa safe, making sure Arya didn't have to marry anyone she didn't want to, those things mattered more to him. If only he knew for certain that his mother was safe. He'd called again, no answer. He promised himself that after they went to the last area in the mountains, the last fire marker on the pendant map, he would drive to the house. She had Sundays off. She'd be home. If she was okay. He prayed she was. Tessa woke up before light and closed the wall. Stephen cracked his eyes open, expecting to see snow, but there wasn't any. The fire continued to burn because, yeah, it was magic, and it didn't need fresh wood. It was a perfect illusion, however. Tessa climbed into bed and kissed Stephen, and he tried to go back to sleep. He really did, but being sandwiched by two beautiful women didn't help his usual morning situation any. Arya woke to the bed, gently rocking, and then it was her turn to be gently rocked. When they all finished, they tried to go back to sleep, but the excitement of exploring another Dracarys Aerie was too much for them. After sealing up the hidden floor of the hotel, they took the secret staircase down to the 14th floor. They emerged from the wall through a magical door that, when shut, looked exactly like any hotel hallway. No wonder no one had ever disturbed the secret rooms above. They stopped at Rosie's Diner in Monument off I-25, and Stephen embarrassed himself by eating three breakfasts. He'd polished off the entirety of the barbecue the night before, so they didn't have to worry about leftovers, and still he was hungry, and brimming with animus. "Can I drive now?" Tessa asked after Arya paid the bill. Arya agreed, and they rocketed back toward Denver. The next Dracarys Aerie was located on Lookout Mountain. They buzzed through Denver, grabbed I-70, and headed west toward Golden. Clouds filled the sky and a light rain fell, but with the temperature dropping, there wasn't a doubt that the rain would turn to snow. "So how am I going to be able to sell that stuff from the Colorado Springs Aerie?" Stephen asked as they made the right turn up the long winding road that led to the top of Lookout Mountain. In better weather, the road would have been full of cyclists, but with the chill wind and slick pavement, they had the road to themselves. Not a single car or bike around.
"There is a Dragon Soul black market for such things," Arya answered. "My father knows..."
The words died on her lips as a huge shape descended upon them, blocking out the light and plunging the interior of the car into shadows. The automatic headlights blinked on. Metal screeched as claws tore into the roof. The sharp, pungent stench of lemons and leather filled Stephen's nose, the same odor he'd smelled before in the Aerie. A dragon soul in true form. It was above them, ripping the vehicle to shreds. And it seemed like they'd be next. Chapter 21. Early Sunday morning, Edgar Vale was shrieking in pain. Mouse had said the dragon skin ritual would take 24 hours, but he was going on hour 30. Or 31. It was hard to keep track. He and Mouse were on top of the Wells Fargo building in Denver, on a platform that was hidden from the eyes of the simple fuckers walking around the downtown below. Edgar's hands and feet were tied to a metal rack with metal cables. The rack had a series of cranks and levers that would either tighten the cables, raise him, or spin him around so that the brazier of hot coals underneath could cook every inch of his skin. His blood and sweat smoked away in the fire, a constant plume of steam and smoke rising up. He could smell his hair burning away even as it grew back, over and over. That smelled better than the barbecue odor of his flesh crisping. He'd thought it would get better when night fell, but then he'd been in a strange situation, half of him roasting and half of him freezing. Now, he lay face down as the coals ate away his skin. Mouse was continually dosing him with morphine to keep him from going completely insane from the pain, but that did little to help. Though she hated him, she was doing her part, whispering the spells and adding the magic herbs, mugwort, yarrow, dragon penny, to the coals. She downed glass after glass of wine. At first, she seemed to enjoy his screams, but now she was pale, clearly exhausted, and ready for the ordeal to be over. Normally, the dragon skin rituals allowed weeks for the final burning, but he didn't have weeks. And he was strong, so strong. The pain would only make him stronger. When he'd gotten locked up for aggravated assault at the tender age of 18, which in street terms was at least 30, he'd met a hardened con named Dipstick, who was in the pen for life. He had 4 counts of first-degree murder under his belt. Dipstick had taken Edgar under his wing, and he told him the secret to life. Life was pain, and the more you liked pain, the more you could like life, until it got to the point where you didn't want comfort, you wanted pain. The special people on the planet had that shit figured out. You look at any Olympic athlete, any politician, any successful artist, and they didn't just want success and glory, they wanted pain and struggle. The real sick ones got off on it. And Edgar wanted to be that sick. So every minute, every second, his skin was burning off him. That was good. Mouse would cast the spells to heal it back on, raise him up off the fire, only to bring him back down onto those coals. He would scream, get hard, scream some more, and he'd remember he wasn't special, but he soon would be. And every bit of agony he was feeling now? Well, he would bring that same agony down on that fucker, Stephen Whip, bring it down tenfold. It was his fault, his and his bitches, that Edgar had to cram weeks' worth of the rituals into a day and a half. That shit he'd never forget. Not ever. Mouse pulled a lever and he rose off the coals. She then touched him with a glowing vial, almost like a perfume bottle. She called it elf tears. Fuck elves, and fuck tears. His roasted, blackened skin grew back, as did his hair, until he was just a naked guy in the cold. He got so he hated the chill air more than the mean lick of the flames.
"We have to stop," Mouse slurred her words. She was beyond drunk. "You're not changing. It's too soon."
"Fuck you, bitch," Edgar spat. "I'm not stopping."
"You'll die."
"I already died at some point last night. This is me, a fucking zombie, and I want more fire, bitch. Give me more fire."
He roared out the words. "You're a sick fuck," Mouse muttered. Then she spun a crank, whipping him around and lowered him back into the flames. And like Dipstick promised, Edgar got off on it. He'd never been harder in his entire life, even though his dick had almost been melted off any number of times in the last 30 hours. Everything human inside of him burned away, and only the dragon in him was left. He sniffed the air and tasted it. Rotten pork on a barbecue, awful and delicious. And that was life. That was him. He had his dragon skin smell, and it was terrible, but he liked it. No. He loved it. Above Stephen, the roof of the Mercedes gave way in a scream of metal and a flash of sparks. The dragon above flung the roof away, and it went banging and clattering across the wet asphalt behind them as chill air swept into the interior. The creature had mustard-colored scales edged in black and reeked of lemons and leather. Arya cursed, drew her pistol, and unloaded the clip into the chest of the dragon. The dragon let out a thunderous roar. Its yellow beard waggled. Tessa spun the car around a switchback and mashed her foot down hard, gunning the engine, leaving the dragon behind for a minute. "Get to the airy," Arya shouted, hair whipping in the pine-scented wind. She flung herself out of the speeding car. In midair, she transformed into a scarlet dragon, her scales steaming in the cold morning. She met the incoming dragon, and they clashed above the road, turning, twirling, somersaulting, as tails whipped, wings flapped, and claws raked at scaly flesh. But the yellow dragon was almost double her size. She was 15 feet long, and it was at least 30 and probably several tons heavier to boot. There was no way she could match its strength. Stephen realized it was a male, and from what he understood about dragon souls, males were rare. "Is this Rahegan Mulk?" he wondered. Tessa slammed the brakes on, then spun the Mercedes around, tires smoking. "What are you doing?" Stephen asked, shocked. "We are not leaving Arya behind," the barista said in her warrior voice. She slammed the gas pedal to the floor again, and the tires squealed in response as they rocketed forward.
Stephen found himself pressed back into the seat, but only for a second. He pulled himself up and then went homo draconis. There was no roof to worry about, so he could expand outside. Using his enhanced strength, he got his feet under him and wedged his massive tail between the front seats to keep himself steady. The two dragons, one massive and yellow, the other slender and scarlet, lashed out with fang-studded jaws, then went in with claws. The yellow worm threw Arya into the pines on the sloping side of the mountain. She bashed through the trunks, toppling dozens of trees and throwing up waves of black mountain dirt. While she was on the ground, the yellow beast unleashed a crackling blast of blue electricity. Electro arc. Stephen was witnessing his first live display of the exhalant. The lightning sent Arya writhing and twisting in pain. Crimson scales spun away as that awful energy ate into her skin. The yellow worm didn't relent, but kept up the onslaught.
"Faster," Stephen growled, his voice inhuman and brimming with anger. "Drive right by him. I'm going to use the speed to hit him hard."
Tessa was silent. They careened down the highway at 100 miles an hour. Stephen was about to see how good his armor really was. The wind screamed in his reptilian ears, and the cold froze his scales, but he didn't care.
"Faster!"
But the engine was already blaring, the tachometer buried into the red. They entered a short straightaway, pulling in range, and Stephen leapt from the car. He let out a roar right before he hit the enemy dragon. If it was Rhaegan Mulk, he was going to pay for murdering Stephen's parents. Like a bullet from a gun, Stephen streaked through the air. He'd timed it perfectly. He slammed into the side of the dragon, and that lightning shit died like he'd hit an off switch. The mustard-colored worm struck the pavement, grinding away the asphalt and a good chunk of his scales. A wing snapped in the crash. Stephen gripped the belly of the worm with his talons, hands, and feet. He wasn't about to let the bone-breaking collision stop him from exacting sweet revenge, Dragonclaw style. The yellow beast would pay for hurting Arya. Stephen clawed up the dragon, slashing him and causing as much damage as he could until the worm tossed him into a tree. He bounced off bark, tore through a few saplings, then rolled down the slope, his head aching, stars flashing in his eyes, his back protesting in agony. He tried to shake off the pain, but he'd been hurt, and not just a little. But Stephen couldn't leave Tessa and Arya with the enemy dragon soul. He refused. He would die first. He gained his feet through an effort of sheer will and sped up the slope as fast as he could manage. He crested the slight rise just in time to watch as Tessa swerved, guiding the Mercedes toward the yellow-scaled dragon. Amazingly, she was driving in reverse, going in to demolition derby that asshat. Trunk first, she crashed into the dragon's head. Then, before it could get to her, she threw it into drive and floored the car. She raced away, putting distance between the car and the downed monster. Arya was still down. The yellow dragon was slow getting to its giant feet. It wobbled, weaving, obviously dazed. Stephen bounded onto the road. The yellow worm opened its mouth and breathed out a blast of orange flame. The fire melted through the asphalt, turning it into a quagmire of burbling black goop. Stephen threw himself to the side and rolled away, dodging the inferno blast. In seconds, he was back upright. After all the marathon sex with his escort, he had animus to spare, and though he'd failed before, he accessed the skill tree, found the true form orb, and focused on it. The yellow dragon was 3 times bigger than he was, and Stephen didn't think he could take it down as Homo Draconis. He needed his full dragon body. Stephen grew bigger, a lot bigger, and managed to flick his wings out from under the skin on his back. The pendant flashed brightly, slicing through the gloom. He raised his claws, now the size of car tires. He was doing it. He was achieving his true form. The yellow worm growled.
"Vale said you were a dragonling, but no, you're more than that. Fuck this."
Instead of attacking, the enemy dragon whirled and straightened his broken wing with a crack. He then swirled a claw in the air and boomed out 2 words.
"Magica cura."
The wing healed, as did some of the dragon's wounds, but he was still missing scales, leathery flesh peeking through from beneath. Even after healing, he looked like he'd found himself under Thor's hammer, and the beating hadn't been kind. Arya lay in her human form among the destroyed trees, her skin smoked from the lightning blast. Stephen took a step toward her, but keeping his true form was too much for him. He knew he couldn't achieve it fully, not yet. The yellow worm took to the air and swooped down onto Arya. He caught her up in one talon-tipped hand and then, with a deep belly laugh, the dragon wheeled and flew off, huge wings beating furiously at the air.
"At least I won't be leaving empty-handed,"
he called back over his shoulder. Stephen bellowed, "No!" He felt himself changing back, first into Homo Draconis and then into his human form. Naked, standing in the cold on the ruined highway, he watched as the yellow dragon escaped with Arya dangling lifelessly beneath him. Stephen dropped to his knees, feeling every wound, from hitting the dragon at 100 miles per hour to careening into fully grown pine trees. Tessa pulled up, got out of the car, and went to him. "Stephen, are you okay?"
"Arya," he gasped. "We have to go after her."
But only storm clouds were in the sky. There was no sign of Arya or the dragon who had taken her. Stephen and Tessa were alone. Chapter 22. Tessa helped Stephen into the Mercedes, which mercifully still worked. It didn't have a roof, the trunk was a snarl of twisted metal, and the engine ticked loudly. Bits of metal tumbled away behind them as they drove away from the battlefield. Still, Tessa had done a great job in using it as a weapon without doing much damage to the engine.
"So what now?" Stephen asked quietly.
"We have to find Arya," Tessa said. "We can't just let this Rehagen Mulk dick take her."
"That wasn't Mulk," Stephen said. "He mentioned Edgar Vale and working for him. I think it was another of Mulk's vassals, or it could have been a Ronin."
"Shit, dragons for hire," Tessa breathed. "What a world we live in. Well, whoever that was one big-ass beast, so that's a male dragon."
"I'll get there." Stephen closed his eyes. He was so cold, but inside he felt colder despite the burning in his chest.
"When you went true form, you were impressive," Tessa sighed. "So where do you think Arya is? I don't suppose you can use the pendant to find her."
"I can't." Stephen lifted the chunk of mystic topaz and accessed the map. The fire marker was still above them, a few more turns on the road away. "But I can find the next Aerie." The barista let a sob escape her.
"We can't. Not without Arya, we can't."
She shook her head, tears streaming down her cheeks.
"We have to," he said softly.
"Once we find the power of the pen, I might have access to spells. Not that I'll know how to use them." They curved around another switchback and drew nearer to an outcropping of rock jutting out of the side of the mountain like an enormous broken thumb. The crag, rising high, split the forest. They were near the top of Lookout Mountain, but not quite at the summit.
"Hold up," Stephen said, squinting as he examined the rugged cliff.
She slowed the car. He raised the pendant. It flashed a brilliant gold. The rocky side of the cliff, edging the roadway, opened, revealing a curving roadway into the mountainside.
"Holy crap."
"Wow, total Batcave action right there,"
Tessa said, awe in her words.
"If only Arya was here to see it. I can't really enjoy it now that I know she's in trouble."
He put a hand on her forearm and squeezed reassuringly. "I understand, but at this stage we have to find my father's pen. The last of the artifacts might be able to give us the power we need to get her back, to stop Rehagen Mulk and his henchmen." Tessa brushed tears from her face, then motored into the passageway, flicking the headlights on. Only one headlight worked, but it cut a wide swath into the darkness. Once they were inside all the way, the cave entrance magicked closed behind them, and a series of torches on the walls flickered on. Tessa killed the headlights and puttered farther in. They cruised past the rough-hewn rocky walls, wet with moisture, and headed around a final bend, which led out in an underground parking garage. A parking lot with more than a few vehicles. A handful of Harley-Davidson motorcycles, a cherry-red Corvette Stingray from the 1960s, a yellow Dodge Charger from the 70s, a big orange Ford Bronco II from the 80s, and a BMW Roadster from the 90s. Tools hung over a workbench flanked by two big, red, expensive tool chests. More of his hoard, now that he was the last of the Drokaris clan. Stephen wanted to get excited by the wealth, but he couldn't find it in him. Not even when he saw the rack of keys that would match the vehicles. They had lost Arya. Nothing would ever be the same. Compared to that, it was hard to celebrate something as inconsequential as a couple of classic cars. Tessa parked in an open space and they got out. A sliding glass door had been cut into the rock wall in front of them. Stephen had to turn into his partial form to wrench open the crushed trunk to get to their luggage. Once that was done, he changed back, slipped into a pair of jeans, and drew on a sweatshirt. He didn't bother with shoes. This changing clothes every 15 minutes business was annoying as hell. Tessa walked to the glass doors and stopped.
Look, this is horrible, but you're right. Once we find the pen, I bet we can magic up a solution. And Aria is tough, you know she is. I don't think that Ronan is going to kill her, not right away. I don't know how that whole escort thing works, but I bet there are rules.
I hope there are. He drew the barista into an embrace. Holding her, feeling her heat, smelling her hair, made him feel better. They'd only been together a short time, but already hugging her felt like going home. Holding hands, they entered the Aerie through the doors. Unlike the Colorado Springs secret floor, this Aerie had a modern feel to it. Sleek metal furniture with cream-colored cushions sat on a black slate floor, which was warm under his feet. It made sense to have heated floors in a cave. The walls were rock, but the entire front of the living room was a window, showing a dazzling view of Denver and the entire Front Range. At night, the light show would be spectacular. The place smelled musty, but only for a minute. As they entered, a fan whooshed to life, bringing in the perfume of the pines covering the mountainside. The sounds of water splashing filled the air. Were there fountains somewhere in the area? It seemed so, though he didn't see them. Some more exploring was definitely in order. A huge kitchen sat off to his right with marble countertops and the latest appliances. Well, they'd been the latest appliances on the market in the 1990s. To his left was a hallway that likely led to the bedrooms and the bathrooms. In the left corner was a fireplace, which ignited, giving them warmth. In the right corner, a staircase spiraled up into the ceiling. That intrigued him. The sounds of splashing water came from there, above them.
Up? He asked, cocking an eyebrow.
Up? The barista agreed. Stephen went first. He climbed the tight metal stairs, which were as sleek and chrome as everything else in the luxury area hidden away on Lookout Mountain. The staircase ended in a room that was something out of a fantasy novel. Unlike the room below, this upper room was mostly cave, but it too had windows facing eastward, which must have been hidden away by spells. Otherwise, Stephen would have heard about such a palace outside of Golden. The ceiling was tall, about 20 feet high, and rough stone. Torches on sconces in the rock walls gave out a warm light. A waterfall of steaming water trickled down the western wall, filling a series of pools, 14 of them, which could be accessed through steps carved into the stone floor. The place looked like some kind of spa. The pools themselves were all different sizes, some only big enough for a single person, while the largest was rectangular and could fit 15 people comfortably. The water in the pools glowed with a warm blue light, which was almost supernatural in appearance. A grand fireplace, hewed into the rock face itself, sat along the northern wall, far bigger than the one on the entry level. Again, flames leapt to life. Running between the big rectangular pool and the eastern-facing window was a thick red carpet covered with furniture. Club chairs, sofas, chaise, coffee tables, even a small bar well-stocked with liquor. The views of the sunrise would be spectacular. The cave was warm, wet, and comfortable. A light mist hung in the air, carrying the smell of sulfurous minerals. Tessa went to one of the smaller pools and dipped a hand inside.
"It must be fed by natural hot springs," she murmured.
"You should get in," Stephen said. Tessa sighed.
"I couldn't. We have to find the pen. The power of the pen."
"Maybe one of us has to be in the pools for it to work. Just go in." She looked troubled for a moment, but then, without another word, she undressed, dropping her clothes onto the Dracarys grimoire she'd been lugging around. Stephen moved toward the large pool and the fireplace. The pendant glowed and felt warm in his hand. The pattern of the pools was familiar. It took him a second, but then he recognized the Draco constellation. The St. Vrain Aerie had mosaics of the stars, and the Colorado Springs Aerie had the constellation on the floor. And so it seemed appropriate that the Lookout Mountain Palace would have the pools in that same shape. Stephen walked to the head of the constellation, which was also the largest pool. He gazed down into the blue-tinged water. In the bottom of the pool, lights glowed. Radiant sapphires were scattered across the bottom. He put his junk cell phone on the stone and then walked down steps into the water.
"Aren't you going to take off your clothes?" Tessa asked from her tub.
"I'm so sick of changing," Stephen said absently, gaze fixed unwaveringly on the gems. The water was hot at first, uncomfortably so, but then Stephen wished it were hotter. His tolerance for heat had increased exponentially. Now he would have relished sleeping in a bed surrounded by the body heat of his escort. His escort. Down by one. But not for long. He would get Arya back, somehow. But first, the pen. He continued to walk until he was forced to swim. The bottom dropped away, and while he thought the sapphires were on the bottom, they were actually just floating there. How deep was the pool? It seemed bottomless. For some reason, he thought of the three strange doors at the St. Vrain Eyrie. The sapphires moved to form a circle around him. They then began to spin, slowly at first, but faster by the second. Tessa saw the strange swirling gems under him.
"Stephen, are you okay?"
He didn't know, but he didn't respond. He was soon caught in a whirlpool, treading water in the center as the water frothed around him, driven into a frenzy by the gems. The water gathered around him, pushing in against his body as it lifted him up, 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 away from the pool below. The water and jewels spun around him like a tornado, and he was at the heart of it, hanging suspended in dripping clothes. The noise was incredible, making it hard to think. The swirling waters continued to pick up in speed, tugging and pulling at his pendant until it was ripped from his neck with a sudden, sharp jerk. Instead of flying off into the vortex, however, it rose, levitating above him. The steel chain melted away, as did the housing, and all that was left was the hunk of topaz. And then, in a flash, the topaz lengthened and shimmered, becoming pen-shaped, morphing finally into a quill. A couple of the sapphires rose out of the whirlpool and connected themselves to the topaz quill. They became a single crystal feather poking up from the tail end of the pen. The voice of Stefan Dracaris boomed through the cave.
"My son, gather your escort, acquire your hoard, build your Ares, finish my work, and bring revolution to this weary world. It is your destiny. Let nothing stop you."
Tessa screamed, "Stephen, what's happening?"
Her voice seemed distant and quiet in the maelstrom of noise and power. The hurricane around him parted, and he saw that all of the water, from every pool, was swirling in the air. Tessa had been caught up in it as well. She floated in midair, just like him, and her eyes were twin suns in her face. She cried out, writhing. Stephen didn't know how he could help her, but it was obvious she was in pain. Acting on instinct, he reached out and touched the pen. The minute he did, the heat in his chest exploded, and his body was enveloped in a roaring blaze. His clothes turned to ash in the conflagration. Orange flames licked up and down his body, and his hair turned to smoke. His skin fried, crisped, sloughed away. He was being cooked alive in the inferno, every nerve howling in agony. A scream tore its way from his mouth but died quickly as magic fire poured in, filling his throat, his lungs, his belly. Some part of him knew this was necessary, that in order to unlock his final transformation he would need such suffering. Arya wasn't around to ask, but this excruciating agony would be worth the price if it gave him the power to save her, so he steeled himself. He endured, soaking up the pain like a sponge. Right when he thought his sanity would snap, the fire vanished, replaced by soothing blue waters once more. The world seemed to shift around him, and he dropped splashing down into the pool as the cool waters caressed his mangled, charbroiled body. The same force that had held him aloft now drew him down, 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 through the depths of the pool, which was far deeper than he could ever have imagined. Below was a doorway. But to where? Stephen found himself gasping, thrashing his arms madly as he suffocated. He needed to breathe. His skin had mostly flaked away to reveal muscle, and he yelled out in shock and fear. He regretted that. Water flooded into his mouth and filled his lungs just as the fire had done moments before. As intolerably painful as the fire had been, the water was almost worse, and he was suddenly sure he was going to drown. He must have done something wrong. This wasn't right.
Only it was. He pressed his eyes closed. When he opened them again, almost against his own will, he found himself floating in a universe of stars and nebulas. A comet streaked by him. All of reality was there for him to see, and the power there, the throbbing power of life itself, felt so close. That celestial power enveloped him, wrapped around him like a second skin. His heart stopped. He felt it stop. He was dead, floating in the middle of creation, and he knew there wasn't just one set of worlds in the universe, but an infinite number of realities. He took a deep, shuddering breath, and it felt like the first breath he'd ever taken. An impossible memory filled him, of being held by his mother. His father was smiling even as tears streamed down his cheeks to fill his beard. His heart thumped to life. First one beat, then another, then another. He was reborn, and his destiny wasn't just to conquer his own primacy on one little bit of rock floating through space. Fate had chosen him to do so much more. But the extent of it seemed fuzzy. Hazy. He reached out an arm, fingers straining as though he could grasp his destiny in his hand. But no, it was too far away, and getting farther by the moment.
"Stephen," Tessa called to him from an impossible distance. "Where are you? Don't leave me, damn it! Don't leave me alone!"
He swam up through the empty space until he found himself swimming through water. Those gems, he realized in a flash of inspiration, weren't sapphires. No, they were stars. But then they too were gone, and he was back in the pool, kicking upward, arms pumping, until he burst from the water. He had skin again. That was good. And the pain was blissfully absent. He paddled to the side and clutched the stone, heart thudding like mad inside his chest. Tessa ran and dove into the water. She clutched him. Her skin felt so good on his. He found rock under his feet. He stood and held her.
"I thought you were gone forever," she sobbed in his arms. "I can't lose you, I can't. You've become a part of me. I felt that before, when the water..." "Stephen, what happened?"
She cupped his head.
"Where's your hair?"
He touched his bald scalp. Burned away, I guess. But he didn't care about that. He'd never been more turned on in his life. He parted her legs and found himself inside Tessa. She kissed him savagely. Both gasped at the sudden heat. He gently but firmly pushed her to the side of the pool and slammed his sex into hers, harder and harder. She came, whining in his ear. He'd never heard her make those sounds before. His own bliss was one stroke away, and he gave himself to the pleasure. The animus between them could have powered New York City for a year. Spent, they climbed from the pool to lie by the fire. They held each other. Stephen knew everything had changed, between them and inside their souls. The sacred pools of the Dracarys clan had given them powers even they did not fully understand. Not yet.
Chapter 23. Arya woke lying in a bed surrounded by statues. Some were ancient, obviously Greek in origin, while others were from some modern artist who had used a mixture of stone and paint. There were even some female figures welded out of metal. The noon sun was muted by the thick curtains as well as the clouds outside. A few fat flakes of snow fell against the pane, but since this was Colorado, that could mean anything. It could snow 4 feet, or in 15 minutes the storm could blow out to the Kansas prairie. The temperature could skyrocket 30 degrees in an hour. Where was she? The last thing she remembered was being scooped up by the yellow dragon after he had hit her with his electro-arc exhalant. Where was Stephen? Was Tessa okay? Arya's bare feet hit the hardwood floor. She was dressed in a red silk gown. Where had that come from? She heard classical music being played on a piano. She wasn't sure what was going on, but following the music seemed like the next logical course of action. She left the bizarre room full of statues and entered a hallway where every inch of wall space was filled with paintings. She recognized the works of a few artists. A Jackson Pollock, a Picasso, a Van Gogh. Their work was undeniable. She paused. There were a few other cubist paintings she was unfamiliar with.
But the surroundings, the bed, the statues, the paintings, told her she was in a mansion. Somewhere. There were any number of rooms off the hallway, and each was full of artwork. From other statues to huge murals which sat on the floor in large Baroque frames. The place smelled like lemons and leather, the signature odor of the yellow dragon. It was his Harry, obviously, and his hoard was art, which wasn't exactly strange for a dragon soul, but it certainly wasn't normal. She didn't see any signs of gold or other precious metals and gems. She stopped at the top of a sweeping staircase. Below, in a room crowded with more art and musical instruments, a big blonde man sat at a grand piano, playing it with the skill of a world-class concert pianist. The man had a long golden beard, and his chest hair was that same gold tangle. He was shirtless. His bottom half was covered in jeans and cowboy boots. He stopped playing.
"So, you're awake."
"Where are my friends?" Arya asked. She'd healed some after her long sleep, but she still felt weak and bruised. The memory of being electrocuted made her shudder.
"I don't know where your friends are," the blonde man said with a slight shrug. "You are here for one simple reason. When Rehagen Mulk or his pet Edgar Vale come for me, to punish me for my failure, I will give you over to them. So we don't need to talk any. Go back to your room. You won't be able to leave. While spells have fallen out of fashion among our kind, I have kept up the practice." He faltered, eyes flashing. "For obvious reasons."
"Which are?" Arya asked. She was intrigued in spite of herself.
"As a Ronin dragon soul, my life is in danger most days. Every little edge I can find, I will use."
He then returned to the keys, playing a piece by Rachmaninoff, Six Moments Musico, Opus 16, Number 4. Arya descended the stairs and stood next to the piano.
"Where am I?"
"My Cherry Creek Airy," the man said, obviously annoyed.
"And what's your name?"
Arya asked. He sighed and lifted his hands from the keyboard. "Does it matter? You don't care, I don't care, so let's go with Liam Strider. It will work as well as any. But what's in a name?"
"A rose by any other name would smell as sweet," Arya murmured.
"I have one of the original texts of the play," Liam replied. "As you can see, I find the finer things in life worth the sorrow of our heartbeats."
He sat quietly, not looking at her. He stood by the polished piano, awkward. Most men would have been staring at her dressed in the skimpy scarlet silk. This Ronin truly was a mystery. The mansion was silent.
"Where is your escort?" she asked. "Or your vassals?"
"I played that game for a bit," the mystery dragon muttered, "but I found such things tiresome after a while. This is much easier."
"If you like being alone, why did you agree to help Mulk and Vale?" Arya asked.
"Another edge," he offered. "I do the local prime a favor and he leaves me be. But Vale didn't tell me the whole story. He didn't mention you, nor did he say that the target was a dragon soul with remarkable power. This new dragon soul will disrupt this once peaceful primacy. I have already been in contact with movers." His next grin was wistful. "And I had such high hopes for Denver. But few will survive the coming fury, that I am quite sure of."
The doorbell chimed. Liam raised two fingers and mouthed two words. "Magica Divino." He stood. He was close to 7 feet tall, lean and striking. He moved like a panther, all power and deadly grace.
"And that is Edgar Vale now. Alone. Strange. But with you gone, I can return to my quiet life. Not that moving is quiet," he sighed.
Arya thought about making a run for it, but she could feel the power of the yellow dragon's spells. Stephen had shaken the strange Ronin, and that made Arya smile. She had been right about how powerful her mate was. When Liam opened the door, the stench of rancid meat swept in. Edgar Vale, gripping the Slayer blade, drove the sword into the Ronin's chest. The yellow dragon stumbled back, shock evident on his face, but already he was turning